Welcome to Let's Finally Watch This, a podcast for casual movie fans who have always meant to watch classic movies. I'm your host, Nick Hayden.
And I'm your other host, Timothy Deal.
And we're not here with a movie. We're actually just in 2024 this time.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's kind of nice to be not have to go back in time this time.
For better or worse, these are the best of times, the worst of times, and here we are.
That's right. End of season three.
So we're going to do our wrap-up where we kind of just look at all the things we talked about, give you our take on what's the most essential movies for a casual movie fan.
That's right.
And then some of our favorites of the season. Yep. Tim, do you think? I think it's been a really good season.
I think it's been a very strong season. A lot of really good movies this time. Last season was, we said, was our quirky out-of-the-box season an unusual season.
Yeah.
This one, definitely, we hit a lot more from the best of lists, I think, and a lot of movies that I'd always meant to see.
And we ran things a little different, and we said, hey, we were going to do less deep research and just kind of talk about the movies, and how do you think that went?
Well, that's a good question. Let's get into, before we get into our essentials, let's talk about the nuts and bolts of the season. The one downside of recording this when we are is that as we record, the last two episodes haven't come out yet. So if there are corrections that our audience needs to make known to us, we don't know those yet. So I apologize for that. But I will note two big things that stood out for me while editing all these episodes. One is that we completely forgot to mention our other nominations for the 1994 episode.
How dare we?
I know.
I mean, in 1984, there's a ton of movies that came out.
Yeah.
So we had to find ones we hadn't seen.
Yeah. I mean, one downside of trying to do the season abbreviated was we didn't do outlines. And so that's...
We kind of winged it.
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that proper conjugation?
We winged it past tense.
We winged it.
We wung it. Yeah. We wound it. I don't know. So that's one reason why I wound up forgetting the 1994 nominees. So we'll give those to you now. Of course, we went with Forrest Gump in that episode. What we did not do was The Shawshank Redemption.
Which was a strong second contender. We almost picked that one.
Yes, a very strong second contender. Shawshank Redemption was not a big hit the year it came out. That's one that became discovered more later on, I think, through when it was got replayed on cable.
I know people were like, oh, that's their favorite movie or an important movie to them.
And I would say it's worth watching. I have seen Shawshank Redemption, and it's certainly worth watching. I don't feel in a hurry to see it again. I liked it. I wouldn't call it one of my favorites, but yeah. And the other one in a completely different genre was Speed.
Speed, which would have been an interesting one to do, but we didn't have quite that level of action movie. I mean, we had Terminator.
Terminator, but and honestly, Terminator in some ways was kind of new for this show. I mean, we haven't really had a whole lot of action, just pure action stuff.
Terminator Disaster was basically closest we got, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And our Westerns essentially. Yeah. Which even those Westerns have been more on the tame side. And I guess the other reason we didn't go with Speed is you weren't quite sure if you hadn't seen it.
It's one of those movies that like exists in my memory as I have seen bits and parts of it.
Yeah.
But knowing me, I've not seen all of it probably, because that's usually what ends up.
If that's the case, yeah. I know I have seen it, so I had seen both of the previous
things. I think Forrest Gump was the best choice.
Yeah, it really was the most iconic of those three choices.
I jumped ahead, so 1984, you also have something to add here.
Yes, I do. And this is just me. There are so many movies we listed off, and how dare I not mention that 1984 was the year that saw the release of The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Which we've both seen. So.
Which, of course, we've both seen. But yes, I mean, me being a big Muppets guy, it seems sacrilegious to not mention that. Even though Muppets Take Manhattan is easily my least favorite of the Jim Henson era Muppet movies, I don't know, that movie, I feel like my relationship to it changes every time I see it. It's either better than I remember it or not as good as I remember it. Like, I think last time I saw it, I was like, this isn't as good as I remember it from last, and it flip-flops.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's been a long time I've seen that one. That's the one I've seen least, I think.
Well, it's one that's directed by Frank Oz, and so he just did a kind of different spin on it in some ways. And so I guess the people who like it most are the people who are from New York.
Okay.
From the Muppet podcasts I've listened to, they seem to be the more likely ones to enjoy it a lot.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a whole side tangent.
Yeah, so those are our corrections and additions.
Yeah, not a whole lot this year. If there are other big name mispronunciations
we didn't know about it.
Yes, we missed out on, so I apologize for that. But yes, so what do we think about the abbreviated nature of this season?
I kind of enjoyed, one thing I think I enjoyed was the 12-minute discussion was kind of fun.
having like, a hard time limit for
and
it.
And we just had to like rush through. I mean, everyone's always wanted a little more, or sometimes we fudged it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we dropped off the questions we had for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes on the more philosophical ones, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
But the 12-minute was a nice replacement for, it was a nice way to kind of compress a lot of those discussion things, aspects we had in previous season. So I didn't mind that.
Yeah. I think it was useful. I don't know that I would bother doing it next season. Like, sometimes it was useful. Every now and then, some of the early ones were like, we didn't actually need that long.
Yeah. So, it was a nice shtick.
It was a nice shtick. I don't know next season if we'll do quite the same thing. We'll see. It was an interesting experiment. One thing I definitely want to correct for next season, we're going to bring back outlines.
Yeah.
Even if I don't get as
detailed
as some of my previous outlines did, I do, having that guideline, the guideline of an outline,
yes,
is a nice way to structure the episode. And there were some episodes where I really wish we could have that.
And I think we'll probably, I don't rethink, but find an angle for some of our historical sections, because we've done the same decade 3 times now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could always bring new stuff. Recapping is important because you might not listen to all the seasons.
Sure.
But we might try to find different angles for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's always nice when we get a director that we haven't really explored much. Mm-hmm. You can talk about his career.
Or like a movie that touches on some sort of historical event that we haven't really unfolded.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like that Forrest Gump gave us the opportunity to look at the 90s in a little bit more detail. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, because like you said, some recap is nice to look at the big picture stuff. But at the same time, I don't want to always be repeating the same facts every single time. So we got to figure something out for the historical angle, I think. Because I don't want to lose that, because I think it's an interesting part of the show.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe we'll just have to focus in like director sometimes, maybe actor sometimes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes the year itself is interesting. Like 1984 was an interesting year because there's so much money being made. And
yeah, yeah. And oftentimes, yeah, a movie will inspire an unusual historical perspective. I mean, when we had Seven Samurai, we had talked about Japanese film before, but we got to really hone in on a very specific era that we didn't, because we were flying through it
exactly.
Previous season. But I would love to know, folks, if there are more historical topics that you are particularly interested in that you would like us to explore some more.
Yeah, but I guess it's even possible if we found something we really want to explore, it might dictate what sort of movies we picked. That's, I mean, it's possible. I'm not likely, but possible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of attached now to this idea of, I mean, it's very ambitious to like plan for this thing to go on for 10 years.
But then we'll have done 100 movies.
Yeah,
more than 100 movies, 100.
120 or something like that.
Yeah.
We might have to go back and pick up 1912 at some point, because I think we skipped that year. But I don't know. I think that's just a cool idea if we wind up doing that.
One for every year.
Yeah, exactly. I think that'd be really fun if we wind up, if the show winds up going that long.
Yeah.
And then maybe change up the format to something completely different.
Yes.
Who knows?
I think that's kind of our review of the state of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're at the heart of this episode.
The essentialness.
Now, let's define essentialness for this case, because there's a lot of different ways you could rank movies. And our tagline says, for casual movie fans who always wanted to watch classic movies.
Who always meant to watch classic movies. Yeah.
So like sometimes we might not pick the most artsy movie or the most, we want to find that sweet spot between like, it's important, but anyone who kind of enjoys movies would enjoy it. You don't have to be deep into, you don't need to be a cinephile to appreciate it.
Yeah, we really are looking for iconicness. I mean, we're also looking for a variety of movies over the course of the season.
Yeah.
But it's true, because what's essential for one person to check out might not be completely different from another person's tastes.
Like last season, 8.5, very highly ranked iconic movie in certain circles, not essential for a casual movie fan.
Not as many. So I think for our essentialness, we've kind of, at least the way I tend to think about it, is sort of a baseline person who is okay with watching more violent content, because otherwise that would disqualify a number of movies from this season. And it's kind of an invisible algorithm and mix of sort of my head of like what's notable, but also what's iconic and what's enjoyable.
So yeah, you can enjoy it. You feel like you're more able to discuss just movie culture with people who know what they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and has had impact outside of that one movie.
There are certain movies on our list of essentialness that are ranked higher than movies that I like more.
Yes.
So some movies I like more are ranked lower in essentialness, but ranked higher.
Yeah, it was fun, but not super important in the scheme of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are disclaimers.
And again, there's a little wiggle room in Tim and I, but we went with this list.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's generally good.
Yeah, sometimes we both make a list. This time I just made a list.
You mean when I looked at it, I'm like, that's pretty close to what I was going to do anyways. I might move this, but that's just my personal preference. So we went with this.
Okay. So starting with number 12.
The bottom of the list. Or the least essential, least enjoyable, least necessary.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. I'm really selling it.
You're really building this one down. But this is probably not going to be a surprise. This was the Grand Budapest Hotel.
And I guess...
Sorry, again, Wes Anderson.
Again, well-made movie, very interesting style. You and I just couldn't figure out why it was quite so interesting.
Yeah, sometimes after I finish editing the episode, my feelings toward the movie may warm a little bit from when I actually recorded the episode. And I'm still working on editing that particular episode. And I think that could happen here. I might walk away with warmer feelings towards it. But still got to kind of go with, one, how I feel about this movie compared to the rest of this season. And it's still kind of going to be at the bottom of the list. Yeah. I would rank this one higher than our other least favorite episodes of previous seasons.
I would agree with that. I think it's better than Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
And I think it's better than 42nd Street.
Yeah.
Yes. It was more enjoyable than both those.
Take that as you will.
Interesting comment. So I asked my sister-in-law, Brianna, who likes Wes Anderson. I was like, hey, we watched this one. What's up? She's like... Yeah, I don't like that one either.
Oh,
so,
really?
She thought it was her least favorite, actually.
That's fascinating, considering the people on Wikipedia were like, oh, this is one of his best.
Yeah, she just thought it was like weirdly, it had weird topics and it was kind of weirdly sexual and stuff. Like, yeah. She's not as much of a fan of this one.
So what is her favorite Wes Anderson movie?
Well, she's asked me then. She's like, have you seen Mr. Fox? Incredible Mr. Fox? I'm like, well, I have seen that.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's other ones, but that's the first one she thought as an introductory one. For me to watch.
Okay. So interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. Right. Number 11.
Number 11 was Cabiria.
Cabiria.
Now, you might have ranked this one a little bit higher.
I might. Yes. And I'll come back to this in my personal favorites list. Again, it is black and white. It is not super essential, and like no one talks about Cabiria.
Not really. I mean, this is one I found out more about just in my research of looking for movies for this show. It was not one I was familiar with beforehand, and for that reason, it's down here. I mean, it's definitely notable. There's a reason why Roger Ebert did one of his great movies essays on it. It is notable as being one of the first film epics, and it is very watchable.
It is very watchable.
Like, I think casual movie fans would not feel completely lost watching
this. But I do think that those teen years, 19-teen years, are just... The awkward teenage years. Like, there's a lot of movies that they accomplish things that people built on, but the movies themselves don't, unless you're a cinephile, you don't think about.
And they're a bit more archaic.
Yeah.
They're a bit more archaic in the filmmaking style. They don't have the foundation that as much that we've become used to.
So that one's there largely just because it's old and not as essential.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. After that comes another oldie.
The Impossible Voyage.
Which is still a blast to watch.
It really is.
But it's like 15 minutes.
Yeah, and this really ranks higher than Kabir mainly because of Georges Méliès.
Yeah.
Like, he's a famous filmmaker. I was more familiar with him than the Pastrone who made Cabiria. But it is a very fun movie.
It is, and actually, it's less iconic, I guess, than...
A Trip to the Moon.
A Trip to the Moon. In my memory, it has a warmer feeling than Trip to the Moon. Like, I just thought it was hilarious. I thought it was great.
I can see that. So. Yeah. I would definitely say if someone enjoyed A Trip to the Moon, they should also watch this one.
Yeah.
Just as a comparison contrast sort of thing.
Exactly. Next up?
Number 9 is Mean Girls.
And so why is this one here, Tim?
Well, this is an interesting one. You know, it's probably way more known than certainly the last two movies we just talked about. But I remember when we watched it, we didn't feel like this was essential viewing for everyone. Like,
yeah. I mean, it certainly hits certain people.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's like, oh, everyone watched movies and needs to watch this movie.
Yeah. It's certainly a good example of a teen movie, but it doesn't necessarily transcend teen movies, I don't think.
It comments on teen movies, which is why it's... I mean, it is a good teen movie, and it kind of comments on teen dramas to a certain extent, but...
If that's not a genre that appeals to you, there's really no reason to check it out.
So again, like most of the movies this season, well-done movie, enjoyable in its context, but for the essential movie-ness,
it's skippable.
It's skippable, yeah. All right, and then after that, this is one where some people might disagree with us.
Number 8, A Fistful of Dollars.
So is there a Clint Eastwood for the season?
That's right. Surprisingly, I think a lot lower than The Unforgiven. But he didn't direct this one.
Yes.
And it's an iconic spaghetti western. It really established the style. And so for that reason, maybe it should be higher. But I also felt like it's also a little generic in some ways. Generic and like weird morality to it.
And I guess it, you had mentioned that it also is kind of overshadowed by Good, Bad, and the Ugly, which is maybe not fair because that's not on our list.
Yeah.
But it is not quite as... There are other examples of this style that might be even more iconic.
Yeah. I think Quentin Tarantino, who likes this movie a lot, has said that it's one of these trilogies that each movie somehow built upon and improved on the one that came before it until it basically perfected with The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. And everyone knows that movie at the very least by its title.
So which is... Comparing to last season, which is the most essential, Shane or Fistful of Dollars?
Shane. Yeah.
It's a more classic, like
I'm pretty sure Shane made it in our top three or four of essentialness last time. And and it's just it's such a quintessential example. Like Fistful of Dollars owes something to Shane, honestly. Yeah. So if you're looking for movies that are foundational and yet still very watchable, I think Shane has that hands down.
Okay.
A Fistful of Dollars, definitely some iconicness stuff to it, but like, again, also a little bit on the generic side, I think.
All right, now we're almost last of our bottom half.
Okay.
Number seven
is Chinatown.
This one's an interesting to me, and I'll come back to it when we talk more about personal thoughts. But this one's depressing.
Yeah.
But it's also super well known, at least for the writing, if nothing else.
Yeah. And I imagine there might be some writers who would rank it as higher. But like, it's so that, I mean, I like 90% of this movie. That ending just really kills it for me. And so for that reason, the fact that it winds up feeling so nihilistic that like, this is not a movie that everyone is going to enjoy or even need to see. But for the cinephile, it's certainly worth watching.
And I was going to say, this is one of those art movies in some ways that like it's going to rank much higher with cinephiles than with the casual movie fan.
Which and is it's funny to say because it is procedural in some ways. It's way less esoteric than, say, 8.5.
It is.
But I think the features that a cinephile are going to be able to pull out of it that would really differentiate it from your police procedural on network TV, I think... You really have to be a cinephile to really enjoy succinct dialogue, interesting cinematography. Again, good stuff in here, but it's not going to rock everybody's world.
All right, we're in the top half now, Tim.
All right.
So, number six is
Double Indemnity.
And this is a great movie all around.
It is. And honestly, this top half, like...
You could watch any of these top half.
Yeah, like, these are all wonderful movies. It just shows the embarrassment of riches that we had this season. But Double Indemnity is here at number six because it is great. It is a film noir, and so it has kind of that dark side to it.
Kind of quintessential to film noir.
Yeah, very quintessential film noir.
But then film noir as a genre is less known and, I guess, important than some genres, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a genre I definitely would recommend for the up-and-coming film student.
Yes.
The one who wants to see, okay, what can film do besides just the cool action explosions and... Etc.
And it's just a very suspenseful, thrilling, I guess, in the old sense.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah. And good morality play, drama to it. And yeah, really good stuff.
Number five.
It Happened One Night.
Frank Capra.
Frank Capra. Who doesn't enjoy some Frank? Well, I know at least one person who doesn't care for some Frank Capra. But like, this just feels cozy and fun. And
this is one of those movies. And like, it's 1934?
1934.
But an old movie, I think you could show almost anyone who likes movies and that they'd enjoy it. Like it feels very, the sensibilities are very timeless.
Yeah. This movie in Double Indemnity, again, is kind of a set that you could argue move the placement up or down
easily.
Just a little easily. I ranked it a spot above Double Indemnity just because I feel like It Happened One Night is more of a touchstone, more of a set the standard for romantic comedies going forward.
You watch it and you're like, this still happens.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a classic screwball. I think it's considered one of the first big screwball comedies. And fairly early into the age of the talkies, again, 1934, the talkies have only been around at this point for like 5 years, 6 years. And yeah, it's a pretty foundational one. And also was a big inspiration for the creation of Bugs Bunny.
So we'll take it.
So we'll take it.
All right, now we're top four. Number four, Tim.
The Terminator.
Because here's the thing. It's the Terminator.
I mean, If you're a sci-fi fan, you know exactly why this is in top four. If you're not a big sci-fi fan, you'd be like, what, really?
No, well, here's the thing. If you're not a sci-fi fan, you still know the Terminator.
Probably.
I mean, that's why it's on this list.
Is that iconic of a movie. Now, is it a little B-movie-ish? Is it a little, like, was it made through guerrilla filmmaking in some ways? Yes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it wasn't an iconic character from the
80s. It had so many repercussions from that movie.
Yeah.
And it's a fun movie in itself.
Yeah. It is still very watchable, I think, to even today.
Yeah. All right. Top three. Number three is?
Seven Samurai.
I mean, because here's the thing, guys. Everyone talks about Seven Samurai.
Yep.
It just works. I mean, it's long and it has some of the cultural things, but it is just a very solid movie in everything.
Yeah. I imagine there are some people who are appalled that this is not our number one movie, or could be appalled. But the only reason it is, this is one that, for me personally, didn't touch pull on my heartstrings quite as much.
Emotionally, it's a little less emotional, I guess. There you go.
Yeah.
But
it's more straightforward.
And it is 3 hours, so it's more of an investment.
Yeah, but it's very easy to understand this being 1954, all the repercussions that this one had, too. The direction of the assemble of the team motif, just a great bit of filmmaking.
And it's Kurosawa.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a good director to watch at some point.
Absolutely.
Number two.
Sherlock Jr.
Because it's fun.
It's Buster Keaton.
And Buster Keaton. Yeah. And I think Buster Keaton's one of those guys, I haven't seen that, and I've heard about him for ages.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people just need to watch him.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the one movie on this list that I would say that everyone can watch it. Like, this is family friendly. This is
it's
accessible
easy to put in,
for all ages.
It'd be weird to not enjoy at least some of this movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And is it as foundational as some of these, like, in terms of techniques? Hard to say, but, like, at the same time, it's just so quintessentially, it feels like filmmaking in its purest form in a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Movement and emotion and, yeah.
It just works. It's 45 minutes. It's anyone who talks about the history of film, Buster Keaton's name's in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, for essentialness and enjoyability and everything, it works great.
It does.
Which leaves number one as?
Forrest Gump.
And this is where I was like, I guess you're right, but, but I went with it because I didn't have a good argument for another one.
Yeah, yeah. And for a long time, it would have been Sherlock Jr. in the top spot here. But when I saw Forrest Gump, I was like, okay, I totally get why this was a phenomenon. And I also understand why some people might see it as just saccharine in some ways. But you look at the number of quotable lines this movie has. You look at the heart this movie has and the iconic scenes. And
Tom Hanks playing of it. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, in a lot of ways, Tom Hanks was already having a good career before this. But this movie, I feel, really established Tom Hanks as America's actor.
Mm-hmm.
America's quintessential actor who can take on almost any kind of role.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, he's played everyone from Walt Disney to Mr. Rogers to a pilot to a ship captain, and you believe him in anything.
Yeah. Even, like, weird old native people in Cloud Atlas.
Okay,
anyway,
sure.
There you go, yeah. I believe that's him. I should probably double check it before I say it. But yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yes.
To even a plastic cowboy doll.
There you go.
But Forrest Gump, it's not a perfect movie, but there's a reason why everyone knows
it. And it is very quotable. It has seeped into the culture.
Yeah.
In a way that we've talked about Blade Runner seeping in the culture and some of these other ones. It's just there, even 30 years later, right?
Yeah. And I guess you could, we talked about Terminator being iconic and such and making the high on the list essentialness for just that. But in addition to just iconicness, this movie has a lot of deep themes to it,
yeah.
I think.
So and it has whole American history. You know,
yeah.
We often seem to, I guess high on the list one time was Singing in the Rain. These ones that kind of look at history tend to, I don't know, for some reason they tend to resonate with
there's
Americans.
A certain, like we've said before, any kind of time you're doing a period piece of some sort, there's a certain timelessness involved.
Yeah.
And here we have a story that spans several decades, and yeah, it still rings true. So there we go.
There we go. And I think, like we said previously, any of the top six would be completely worth watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And almost everyone this season.
Yeah. So now, shall we get into our personal favorites, Nick?
Sure. Yes, let's do this.
So you said you didn't actually rank yours.
I kind of ranked them. I kind of just said, like, almost like you graduate, like, you get the award for most likely to, end up in jail.
Okay.
But I think your first and my first as enjoyable just all around fun are the same.
Okay. So should we start at the top then, or should we, you want to hear, because I usually just do our top five.
Yeah.
So
you want to work backwards?
That's kind of what
I
was thinking.
Okay. What's your number five?
Number five for me was Seven Samurai.
Okay. Which I'll just throw mine in. That was my number four.
Four. Okay.
Go ahead. You do first.
Well, I guess I kind of said this earlier. The only reason this is probably higher for me is intellectually, I found it very interesting.
Yes.
Very. And it's not as if it doesn't have any emotion, but for me, it was a more of an intellectual movie than like, oh, this is really tugging my heartstrings sort of thing.
It does. It's not that it's an effort to watch, but you engage it differently than some other movies. Because it's translated, it's long, it has themes.
It's a different culture. It's
a different culture.
That's always going to play into it.
But man, it's good.
Yeah.
It's very good. So that's why it's number four for me.
Yeah, it's certainly one that explores lots of different themes, but it was like, yeah, I enjoy this, but it isn't like, yeah, not my personal deep-seated feeling favorite.
So my number five then.
Yeah.
And it gave it my writing award because, okay, Chinatown's weird. But I'm still left with the idea that I was really impressed with the pacing and the writing and everything. And as a writer, I'm just like, I had to give it something because it's not enjoyable, but it's hard not to admire it.
Yeah, it's true.
And so I wanted to give it something just because I really do admire the way it, the last 5 minutes are dumb. but as a piece of work, as a piece of art, it impressed me.
Okay.
So that's why it's number five.
All right.
Okay, so what's your number four?
My number four was Double Indemnity.
Oh, that's my number three.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a movie that just works. You talk about tight writing. This movie has very tight writing. It just functions in what it's supposed to be doing. There's no wasted space or fluff.
And it has suspense. It has morals. It has great characters.
Cool black and white cinematography. You talk about black and white being an impediment. This is one of those cases where black and white makes a case for why black and white can look cool. Between shadows on the wall and the dark, anytime you've got someone narrating while staring out a window at the rain, that you've got that good noir moodiness.
Yeah, top-notch stuff.
Yeah.
I have another number three.
Wait, you have two number threes?
Yes.
You just forget something?
No, I just because Chinatown was going to kind of be in its own category, but I named it five, so I have two threes.
Okay.
Okay, and this is my weird one. This is my, I loved Cabiria.
Okay.
All right? I just really enjoyed it. At home being like, man, they should remake this movie. It'd be a great Netflix series. And again, it's not everyone's cup of tea. It's silent. But in my memory, I was really surprised. I was not expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. Now, I might rewatch it later and be like, oh, why did I like this? But in my memory, it was very, I didn't expect much. And it was just far more fun and enjoyable than I thought it would be for being a black and white silent film.
Well, there's certainly an element of the surprise that can definitely affect your impression of something when something is way more than you expected or more accessible than you expected.
The characters were fun. The sets were great. It moved. It moved fast for... Mm-hmm. I remember watching Metropolis. Was a great movie, but that one moved slower in my memory than
sure.
this did.
I can see that.
So, okay. Number two, then.
I have to do my number three.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Because Double Indemnity was in my four.
And
my number three is It Happened One Night.
That's my number two.
Interesting. I have a feeling I know where our lists are going to differ here.
Yes.
But It Happened One Night, I was not expected to have a romantic comedy this high in my list. But then, again, that's a movie that just, it works.
It works. And it's fun. I think you could literally show it to anyone and they'd be like, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. The characters really make that one in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Clark Gable is fun. Claudette Colbert is a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it's just it moves and, moves by the traditional stuff, but also has weird little
asides
and unique features to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we said, Frank Capra has that slice of life Americana that is just feels good.
Because what's your number two?
My number two is Forrest Gump.
There you go.
Yeah. Which I'm guessing didn't make your list.
It didn't. And I think it feels unfair, but it just, since it wasn't new to me for one.
Sure. Sure.
And two, I liked it. I liked it better this time than last time, but I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah. I did not expect to like this movie.
So this is your surprising one.
Yeah, it really is. I think because a lot of the people I knew were kind of ho-hum on it,
mm-hmm.
but I think this movie just hit me at the right time. I'm not even sure if I would have liked this movie as much if I did see it in film school, in my 20s. But as a sappy 40-something dad, particularly the ending, really got to me. I don't know. I'm in a certain spot where I'm in that season now where family mushy stuff gets to be probably more than it used to.
It'll keep doing that.
Yeah. I can see that.
Like, for some reason, I tear up at Luca. I don't even know why. So there you go.
But yeah, I think partly because of that. And again, just the fact that it looked at a very tumultuous period of American history and yet somehow also had this warm, optimistic viewpoint.
It does do that really well. It really does.
There are so few movies that do that sort of stuff that, for one thing, not just white, it doesn't whitewash the hard stuff that was going on, far from it, but it doesn't it
reinterprets it in some ways.
Yeah, it doesn't dwell in it. You don't come out and feel like, ugh, I've just been soaked, at least for me. I imagine if there's some people who aren't used to that sort of thing. I mean, Jenny is in a strip bar at one point. So I could see how that could really bother someone. But for me, I didn't come away feeling about that. I just felt like, I don't know, it had this very optimistic viewpoint of people, which I appreciated.
You know what this list shows? You know, I had Kabir be a surprise me that two things really affect your enjoyment of art. One is just expectations in some ways. But also just like, you're right, time of life. Sometimes you come back to a movie and it makes more sense or less sense. And
yeah.
So again, take our favorites with a grain of salt. You may love Grand Budapest Hotel, and it just didn't resonate with us.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
Okay, number one, Tim.
Sherlock Jr.
Sherlock Jr. You just grin during the whole thing. It's not only grin, but like, you're like, how did they do that?
Yeah, yeah. It was the one movie this season for a long time that I felt like had a real sense of wonder of like, of like filmmaking delight. Like, this is what movies should be, this kind of fun.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's easy to put this at the top.
Yeah,
Well, and it being short and being fun, it's hard to think anything bad about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just true. Like, it knows exactly what it's doing. It's just long enough to do it. And you're left being like, I need to show everyone I know this movie.
And it's not just pure zaniness. I mean, I don't think we had Marx Brothers ranked quite as highly as this one. But it does have that heart, that like human connection of like, even just a simple matter of him, the main character, watching movies to see how he should react to something. We talked about that on the show. But
it's
like,
a love story, and it's all, you know, it's, and it deals with like his insecurities, and you know, it's all that played up, and it works really well.
Yeah.
Yep. And guys, it's on YouTube. You can watch it for free.
Go watch it right now if you haven't seen it. Sherlock Jr., it was fantastic.
All right, Tim, that was a pretty good list, I think.
I think so.
And it was a pretty good season.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts on the season?
Just that I'm happy we got to go through these 12 movies. It's always fun to go through the decades. And also just that it was such a strong season. I don't mean to pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, we did a good job. But just more like a delight is like,
the fours are great.
Yeah.
I don't know, good job of filmmakers of every other decade. And I think it's been nice for me because I always joke when people are like, you haven't seen them, like, I only see movies on other people see movies. Like, I don't go find movies on my own.
Yeah.
And this podcast is somewhat an excuse for us to go watch like really good movies that we wouldn't pick up normally. And I hope it encourages some of you to go pick up a movie that's really good that you might not see and go watch it with somebody. It's always better.
It's true. It's a funny thing, I feel like, because on the one hand, you don't necessarily need to feel pressured to see movies that everybody sees because like there's some like, yeah, I haven't seen Godfather Part 2 yet. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I'll probably watch it eventually, but I don't feel that pressing need to go watch a movie about mafia gangsters.
Yeah.
So I think it's, one hand, completely fine to cater to your own tastes. On the other hand, it's also great to not always stay in your lane.
You just see something like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. And you might not, like, Fistful of Dollars, not necessarily my cup of tea, but really fascinating.
Now you know what about what that genre
is. And when other people like it, you can at least understand why they might like a thing.
Yeah. That's why we present these movies in the sense of, what would we recommend it? Well, if you're this kind of person, if you're looking for this kind of movie, because recommendations are so situational.
It really is, yeah.
So personal. But yeah, it's been a fun season.
Yeah, it's been a good one. Three down.
We'll see what happens next.
Seven to go? No. We'll see if we keep having time.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, and whatever.
Yeah, and I know I was going to follow up with something, got nothing. All right.
That's all you got.
That's all we've got. All right, well, bowing out of 2024 then. This is the last thing you hear from us this year, probably.
As far as we know.
You might hear us from a weekly hijack coming up sometime early 2025 for a one-off.
That's true. Weekly Hijack has its 10th anniversary coming up pretty soon, and we have an idea for it, something we've been meaning to do for a while.
Other than that, feel free to listen to our Mothership podcast, The Royal Train of Thought, 150 episodes. Complete. Enjoy them. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Mm-hmm. You can check that out at our website, DearOldTrainsOfThought.com. I think hopefully most of the episodes should be up and running by the time you hear this. If not, all episodes are available on YouTube for Derailed Trains of Thought.
Yeah, we have a few more things fixed on the website.
Yeah,
yep.
It's in progress.
Other than that, I guess Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and we'll see you when we see you.
See you when we see you.
Until then, this has been Nick.
This is Tim.
Bye.
Bye-bye.